Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine and NHL.com, joins us. Kevin, lots to get to, so let's jump right in. I want to start first with Darcy Kuemper, who's in goal tonight for the Minnesota Wild. And the one thing, and I talked to Mike Greenley about this earlier, there's been some struggles with him when it comes to crease depth. And I was watching the games where he'll have a solid game going, and then suddenly when a team gets cycling and gets a lot of pressure on him, suddenly he reverts back and he's almost playing on the goal line and it's killing him. How does he get out of doing that?
Well, I mean, such a tough spot for him. Because trusting yourself is the hardest thing to do when you play once every 2 weeks. Like, you can work on that in drills. You can work on that with your goalie coach, game situations in practice. But every goalie sort of has, you know, it's funny, everybody, when they're not confident, goalies have tendencies and tells, so to speak. Some of them get more aggressive. In other words, the closer I can get to the shooter, the better chance this is going to hit me. Marc-Andre Fleury was a classic case in the past. As soon as there was a sign of adversity, especially in the playoffs, he became hyper-aggressive. And again, it's that mentality. Well, if I'm close to the shot, to the puck as it's shot, that means I'm cutting down angle, therefore better chance it's going to hit me. Never mind what the hell happens when I can't save it cleanly and I'm 2 feet out of my crease. The other one is to retreat. And I think that you do see a little bit of that in Kuemper's game, and that's kind of natural because he's in a tough spot. I mean, look at his starts, you know, in his last five, December 17th and 23, so that's a week apart. Then a couple weeks to January 7th is his next appearance, then January 14th is a week, and then January 20th. I mean, there's pretty good gaps in there between starts, and it'll be another two-week gap before he starts tonight. So finding that confidence in your rhythm and your timing and your positioning, that's not easy for a young guy going through the process, only playing once a week. That said, I looked over the last couple of games, did some quick video here after getting your note about examining Kuemper, and you know, you're right. He's not aggressive in terms of depth from the goal line out, and he does have a tendency at times to get caught. But it's interesting to watch him get over-aggressive laterally, getting caught outside the posts on those plays. Again, using Fleury as an example, he used to chase plays outside his post with that aggression. I'm watching Kuemper, and you're right, he's not out there at the top of his crease, but he's getting caught outside of his blue ice to the left and right of it. And in those scramble situations that you talk about, that gets compounded in two ways. One, you've got more, you're not in the middle of your net by default. You're working from outside of your post trying to regain position if you're chasing angle wide. Two, you've got a longer distance to go if that play happens to move laterally, and there's been a number of goals recently where that's the case. He's trying to get across because he's, again, caught outside his post, say, to the left, and he's got to get back to the right. And three, there's just some deficiencies in his movement. There's some delays. Whether it's off the rush or in those scrambles, there's a lot of open and close to his movements. In other words, he has to open up to gain angle, and then he pushes into his new save as opposed to closing on angle all in one fluid motion, which is one of the big changes that Dubnyk has made. And you add the delays that's caused by that, plus the holes that are opened, especially from the knees. So if I'm on my knees pushing left to right, and again, in his case, he's more aggressive, so he's got further to travel. It's a bigger push. He's got to really open things up and go across. And there was a goal against the Stars recently, a couple starts ago, where exactly that. It's just a little, looks like a bad goal. It's a little chip by Sagan on the other side of the crease that goes right through him, right underneath his pass. But because everything opens up before he pushes across, there are more holes there. And he's a big goalie. He's got a long frame. And we've talked before about big goalies opening bigger holes. And I see a lot of that in Kuemper's game. Holes not only between him, between his arms, between his legs, but holes in terms of his movement that cause delays in him getting left to right. I mean, you know, game plan if you're the Oilers against him is pretty obvious. Just make him move left to right. Again, whether it's off the rush, whether it's in scrambles, make him move, make him open that big body up, and there will be holes, there will be time, there will be space.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, joins us. Kevin, lots of hockey topics to discuss, and let's start with Jimmy Howard and his returning and how, you know what, that makes it very interesting to see what Detroit's going to do and potentially Vegas with them for expansion.
Definitely. I really think, Jason, maybe outside of Pittsburgh, obviously with the Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray situation and how that resolves itself, to me, Detroit's the next on that list in terms of a team that's got some tough decisions to make, a team that might need some help from Vegas in terms of cutting a deal perhaps to take somebody and not the other guy. And you can't help but wonder if one of those deals might not be a trade for Jimmy Howard. I think a lot of people talking, you know, to coaches from around the league and in the goaltending community believe that Vegas will acquire that quote-unquote number one guy, a guy who's had some experience in that role, either through the expansion draft or through a trade before. And what Detroit can do to entice them to take Howard is perhaps agree to take some of that salary. And if you're thinking, okay, well, why would they do that? It's more than just making sure they don't lose Mrazek at this point. It's making sure they don't lose Jared Kirou. So there's some talk even that they might expose Mrazek instead of Kirou around the league. I find that to be a bit of a stretch, frankly. But when you look at how well Jimmy Howard's played, and if he were able to return this week and kind of pick right up where he left off in terms of the changes in his game that he made this summer, manifesting themselves in a save percentage right now that's at 934, I think interest around the league, interest in Vegas picks up. And you wonder if their biggest concern is protecting both those goalies, do they need to cut a deal to move Jimmy Howard and thereby protect themselves from losing one of the other guys? So they're a team that I think they're one with more dominoes than others. And depending on how that domino falls, I think they're one that could really affect the expansion draft from a goaltending standpoint.
Kevin, now why are you suggesting buyer beware when it comes to Ben Bishop at the deadline?
Well, for similar reasons that maybe the St. Louis Ryan Miller deal didn't work a couple of years ago. Ben Bishop, he's not quite Ryan Miller in terms of a read and react guy, but he is a guy who loves to see pucks off sticks. To me, this is a horses for courses argument. Much like in golf, I believe there are goaltenders that fit certain styles, certain types of systems. And I think that Ben Bishop, in talking to him in the past, is a guy who really relies on reading the release. He's not a very technically efficient goaltender. For such a big body, and as much as people tend to classify him, I heard recently, I can't remember where it was, somebody said, you know, he just looked like a big body that got in the way. I think you talk to goaltenders around the league, that couldn't be further from the truth. Some of his peers admire just how reactive he is for such a big body. There's some Pecorini in there, to be honest, where, you know, a goalie coach might look at it and say, geez, he'd be better off using his big frame more efficiently. But goalies around the league admire sort of the raw skill that he relies on. Now, the thing about that raw skill is if you're changing from one team to another and that system doesn't quite fit your expectations, or maybe it's a more collapsing puck blocking system where you're not going to see as many of those releases, well, Ben Bishop, as big as he is, isn't a guy who just gets in the way very efficiently or very effectively. He relies on those long limbs to make athletic reactionary saves, not so much to just close holes and play positionally. So if you've got a team that, you know, that wants somebody a little more A to B, technically sound, doesn't necessarily, as much as all goalies want to see the puck off the stick, but doesn't rely on it as heavily as Ben Bishop, you know, he might not be a fit for that style of team. And, you know, same thing Ryan Miller. As much as I don't think he's getting moved from a Vancouver perspective, he's been so good since Christmas, and they're clearly all in on making the playoffs, whether it's realistic or not. You know, you hear him talk. He talked the other day about getting used to playing with Nikita Trampkin, their big 6'8" Russian defenseman, and how much more comfortable he'd gotten over the course of this season with how Trampkin was going to play certain situations so he could read off that Nikita's going to do it this way, so then I react that way. And so much of his game is predicated on those reads that when he switches to another team, if it took him 4 months to get used to how Nikita Trampkin plays, how long is it going to take him to adjust to an entirely new team with all different tendencies on its back end and potentially a new system? So that type of goaltender, the kind that relies more on reads and anticipation than on necessarily positioning a technique, to me, my opinion is those are the guys that take longer to adjust when they move from team to team in a trade deadline situation.
Okay, interesting. Now, what do you think of shot quality when it comes to goalie stats, right? Because you know, it looks like Devan Dubnyk's numbers drop significantly if you're basing it just on shot quality. And it all depends on who's marking the shot quality, right?
Yeah, no, this is an interesting one, and I did take a look around at some of the different, you know, analytics websites and some of the different places and some of the numbers that kind of came out at the All-Star break for evaluations. And yeah, it was really interesting. Listen, there's a caveat here every time. All of those sites are using are generating metrics based on the NHL's raw feeds. And as much as they bend them into areas to create different measurements in terms of how dangerous a type of chance is, and then using that as sort of this is what we expect, quote-unquote, league average from this type of shot in this area, having charted a lot of games personally in the past, the discrepancy between what those NHL feeds create and what I chart and taking the time to slow-mo every shot down and place it properly in goals, it's always blown me away. But I sort of trust the analytics people, and they say that comes out in the wash with sample size and with some of the, you know, adjustments they can make for areas. So that's my first sort of caveat. The second one is that it's still largely, not exclusively, but largely based on shot location. And the reality is what happens sort of to the goaltender pre-shot in terms of how much he has to move, how much angle is changed, whether the puck crosses the center of the ice below the hash marks, as Steven Valiquette argues, what he used to call the Royal Road, now calls the slot line, those significantly affect shot quality in my mind more than just location. So you can have one team that gives up 30 shots from, say, inside the left faceoff circle, and if those attacking players are coming in a straight line at the goaltender, that's an easy save. You can have another team and say 20 of those 30 shots are one-timers off a lateral pass. That's a tough save. So I take everything with a grain of salt. But that said, those location measurements are the best we have based on sort of public data, readily available data. And I thought it was interesting to note when you looked through a few of them, you're right. Dubnyk drops from a guy who's, you know, pretty clearly above the league to kind of fourth or fifth spot. And he'll be the first to tell you that system in Minnesota, especially the way they don't exclusively block shots, the way in certain areas they let the goaltender see it and worry more about tying up sticks and blocking out bodies, he'll be the first to tell you that's been a big part of his success this year. You look at some of the other guys, interesting that Cam Talbot is in the top of most of these charts in the Vezina conversation based on these charts, should be. You look at Ryan Miller and Jacob Markstrom here in Vancouver. I mean, as good as Miller's been since Christmas, and as much as the narrative around here is about how he's unquestionably the number one because of his recent play, if you look at his season on a whole, he's actually below league average. Whereas Jacob Markstrom, who's back to starting, if he's lucky, once every 7 to 10 days, is actually still slightly ahead of league average. So again, everything is with a grain of salt, but I find it interesting when you look at these charts, there are some names that jump out that, you know, when you measure shot quality, it doesn't match up to what you sort of think of off the top of your head or what that narrative may be. The other one is Kari Lehtinen. One of these charts, again, had Lehtinen in top three, top four spot, and there's a guy who we all think is universally struggling. Yeah. You know, again, is he a top three goalie in the league right now? No. But it kind of places at least some weight better than what we have anecdotally to confirm that, guess what, Dallas is a crappy team defensively. It gives you a little bit a better measurement of that when you see a number like that.
And one last one, I guess, kind of a two-parter. A, Jake Allen, who insists it's not technical, so if it isn't, what the heck is it? And B, Ottawa and the Leafs both have 70 days left in the regular season. They both have to play 35 games. So basically it's every second day. They have a pretty compacted schedule. What do you think that means for the backup situation in Toronto?
Let's start with Ottawa and Toronto. I think in Ottawa, it means it's a very good time for Craig Anderson. As much as it's not about timing, it's about taking care of his family needs first, the timing is good for him to come back because they've been riding Mike Condon so hard throughout this. And Toronto and Ottawa are two teams that have, I think it's 35 games in the last 68 or 70 days of the season. I mean, basically a game every night the whole way through, some back-to-backs mix in there. They are going to need more than one goaltender. And Mike Condon, and actually to go back to the, you know, who fits new teams and what style will translate quickest to a newer team, there's a guy who plays it very much A to B, very much contained. The same reasons the Canadians saw him as a good backup last year, style-wise, I think that's allowed him to jump from Montreal to Pittsburgh, where he barely played, to Ottawa in a new system. and be good kind of as he arrives in Ottawa. But they're going to need Craig Anderson too. And I think for the Leafs, it's imperative that Mike Babcock trusts Curtis McIlhenny, because as good as Frederick Anderson has been, much like Cam Talbot, in bucking that trend of falling apart amid the workload this season, to ask him to do it in the busiest stretch of the season after an already compacted schedule for a guy who's never played this many games just seems like you might be asking too much. And who knows, maybe Freddie Anderson is up to it. But it does seem like a tall ask, and I do think you're going to need to see more of Curtis McIlhenny, who in my mind was a good pickup for them down the stretch here, just to ensure you don't lose what you're getting from Frederick Anderson. And as far as Jake Allen, a lot of goalies, like I said last week, are struggling with this schedule because it doesn't give them time with the goalie coach. He insists it's not about that technical time. It's not about missing. It's not about anything technical. It's all between the ears. Yeah, it's interesting he had a new baby at home. I've heard some goalie coaches argue that if you'd look at Jake Allen, Carey Price, and Brian Elliott, what do they all have in common? It's a new baby at home. We did have a theory at Ingle, among the Ingle magazine writers, that babies eat save percentage, jokingly. And we have seen it in the past. But again, there are so few absolutes in this game. So maybe enough to throw you off your routine is enough to cost you mentally at the rink. But again, I point to Cam Talbot with Twins and everything he's doing this year. So there's no absolutes. There's no one answer for every goaltender. You look at different things. Jake's a goalie who has a very solid technical foundation, so I think he would get back to that rather quickly. That he insists it's all between his ears. Makes it for very interesting to watch his start closely tonight, because if it continues to slide, it continues to slip, you wonder how you fix it, especially not just for this season and get it corrected as they chase a playoff spot, but this is a guy who starts a four-year contract next year. And as I've talked about in the past with guys like Steve Mason, when it starts going downhill like that and the team starts, you know, you're cheating for teammates and teammates are cheating for you and nobody trusts each other, it can be very hard to put it back on the rails. And they're committed to him for another 4 years beyond this one, so they need to get it back on quick.
Kev, great stuff, man. We'll talk to you next Monday. Have a good one.
You too, Jason. Thanks.